Hello, Internet. There are many places where you could get your running news, and there are many places you can get your podcasts. We're happy you chose this one.
I'm Chris Chavez.
I'm Alex Lohr.
And I'm Mitch Casto.
And you're listening to the Running Our Mouths podcast on Sporting News.
And Bannister has done it. Though he's out on his feet, his coach and team manager tell him he's achieved his ambition. The mile in 3 minutes, 59.4 seconds.
Steve Prefontaine of the United States must keep an eye and see what he does in the early going.
And could this be Owen's first defeat? Owen is in trouble. And so gets the revenge he wants.
Beardley is making a move. It has come down to this. Beardley and Salazar. The motorcycle's got to get out of the way. Here comes Beardley. He's got to make a move on Salazar.
Watch the clock. It's gold for both. And again, he's done it again. A new world record for Usain Bolt. They say lightning doesn't strike twice.
Welcome back to another episode of the Running Our Mouths podcast. Wanted to give a quick shout out to everyone out there who's been downloading and tuning in each week to listen to the three of us talk. Quick thank you for all that. If you like the show, subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Give us a little bit of feedback. Let us know how we're doing. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the dream that was Jeremy Warner and the 800, or that is... It might happen. Found that out this week. Spoke to him. We'll have Otto Bolden on the podcast talking and giving his take. Then we're going to touch on some post-Houston half marathon results. How did Meb do? How did the rest of the Americans? Who surprised us? We'll get a quick recap of the events on the track that also happened this weekend at Washington and then all across the country. And at the very end of the show, we're going to come up with names for Sam Shalenga's new training group out in Tucson with Bernard Lagat. But let's start off. We're more than halfway through the first month of 2015, and I think we're ready to call this year the year of the pole vault. We had the high jump on display last year, and now the women's indoor pole vault is rocking.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch, you were a big fan of the high jump last year. Are you kind of excited for the pole vault this year?
Yeah, I don't want to be too controversial here, but the pole vault is a very fun event to watch, and I enjoy it.
Definitely.
The vertical jumps, I don't know why people aren't into them. They should just have their own highlights. Maybe just their own meets. I love it. People jumping high. People going fast is so 2014. People jumping really high is so 2015. What was it? 2 weeks ago, Sean Barber, men's collegiate record. Then Arkansas Sandy Morris goes, I'm going to go, first of all, also, I hate the imperial system. The imperial system is dumb. Thanks a lot, Obama. I'm going to metric on this one. So 4:60 the Arkansas-Texas duel, and then the next day,
Demi Payne of Stephen F. Austin.
Demi Payne. What were the? I mean, what did USITF? USITF. CCCA tweet that
I got this. I got the tweet. It's for the first 17 years of the NCAA indoor women's pole vault, only one woman cleared 15 feet. Two have done it in the past 17 hours. Hashtag year of the vault.
It's insane.
That is completely insane. And I think it's weird because, you know, when I look back to like the beginning of my college days or like middle, like end of high school, I feel like there was this weird kind of series going on where a lot of like high school associations were very scared of the pole vault. And honestly, I didn't know what the future of the pole vault was in the United States, and now all of a sudden it's come back with some fervor. And what another interesting part of it is it's on both sides. It's both men's and women's are having this huge trajectory this year comparatively over the last couple of years. And I agree with Mitch, the event can live on its own, and we've seen it live on its own, such as, you know, events like, you know, the pole vault in the mall and things like that. I love the vertical jumps. They just have that that intangible thing, like, you know, that person either made the mark or they didn't. And anybody in any realm or any sport fanaticism can understand that.
Yeah, I think it might have been this past weekend or something like that. There was the pole vault summit. I know Trey Hardy was probably out there improving upon just working on his own pole vaulting game. Jen Sir shared a photo on her Twitter of these pink pole vaults that she's got coming out. So, I mean, these stars are out there. I feel like sometimes Jen Sir is like a huge name. They don't get the credit that they deserve sometimes. They don't get as much attention as some of these other runners. If we look at Demi Payne here, her dad was a NCAA pole vault star, Bill Payne. So, I mean, runs in the genes here. These girls are getting up, and right now Payne is the collegiate record holder for another maybe 17 hours until someone breaks it tomorrow. So these girls are getting up there. You guys have anything else to add? I mean, this is it's early in the season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it might be an influx in quality of facility, maybe. And obviously, yeah, the internet exists, and so there's lots more internet out or information out there on technique and such. But the influx of quality facilities for vaulters to train at this type of year has just completely kind of escalated and accelerated the games and marks for early season for sure.
I'm so glad that there's actually a video that exists of those two vaults, because I feel like it'd be such a shame, because just to see how high they got up was pretty impressive. Giving some more love to the vertical jumps. Marquette, like right here, they have Wally Ellenson, two sport player. He's the basketball player and he's a high jumper. Clears 7.5 and I think it was like 3/4 or something like that. Number 3 in the world, number 1 in the U.S. right now. Obviously, it's really early, but for a two sport athlete, that's insane. His brother is like another star basketball player. I'm working on a profile right now for Sporting News on him, so look out for that in the next coming days. But yeah, he's
pretty much a bigger deal than Dwayne Wade at this point from Marquette.
I guess so. He, like, a lot of people were showing him love on Twitter, and it's incredible. I'm Alex. I'm not sure how close you like Duke basketball. Steve Wojciechowski a few years ago,
yes.
Floor slaps.
Yes.
Well, he's now the coach. Spoke with him about him, and he was calling Wally an Olympic caliber athlete. So to manage both of that, I mean, it's impressive. Balancing a full workout load as a basketball player, and then just coming in here, he's pretty much jumping at like whenever the team's away because he can't travel. So vertical jumps, this is their year. let's get to the track now. Up in Washington, we saw some fast times on the track with Jasmine Todd opening up with a 7.13 for the 60.
Mm-hmm.
Number 10 on the all-time collegiate list. She's got to be the Ducks' new star on the women's side. Wouldn't you guys agree?
Yeah, I think that's a great addition for the Ducks for sure. I mean, you've seen their indoor depth with a couple stars like a Prandini and now Todd. I mean, they got just everybody. They're so deep, and they got somebody in each event that can just scratch and claw that. That they have basically somebody in every event that could be in the top three come at the come Fayetteville Indoor Championships. So yeah, I think Flo pointed it out earlier this weekend. The rich get richer for the Ducks in indoor season.
And then the Pac-12 is just going to be absolutely loaded, because then you've got Stanford, Elise Cranny raising some eyebrows, coming really close to, I believe it's the collegiate record by Kate Van Buskirk for the 1K. And then
oversized track,
yeah,
unfortunately,
right. And then Olivia Baker smokes Mary Kane later on in the day.
Okay,
it's a rust buster. I would go so far as to say
it was a 600 meter race, and it was pretty close. I saw a lot of like, I I would say she beat her. That would be an objective thing to describe that race.
That's as far
as
you're
good? Going. Yeah, we know she's really good. We saw her at World Youth, and we saw her at a bunch of post meets in high school. Yes,
she tore up Penn Relays.
Yeah.
Girl runs like 51 high splits, 52 splits, an 800 meter runner. You know that 4.8. Those F48 combo, man. The 8.15 is so 1980s.
I thought the story was less. Oh, Mary Kane got beat, but I agree. I think Olivia Baker is. I agree. She's very, very strong. And I thought she was going to get rolled. I mean, coming into the home stretch, it looked like she was going to get rolled by Mary Kane and the other Oregon girl. But she wasn't super smooth. She didn't make it look pretty. But man, is she strong. But I agree with Mitch. It's a rust buster. 600 meters is not very far. No time for panic mode for sure, Mary Kane.
I'm curious what other workout Alberto probably had them do afterwards. Do you guys think, I mean, we never really hear of Stanford sprinters. So there's a DMR for Stanford with Cranny and Baker. I mean, how do you fill the other two legs? That's the question.
Well, they have a good little like 400 stable brewing, and I've said this over the last couple of years. Stanford women very, very close to be contending for an NCAA outdoor title for sure. They've had a couple field event people that scrap for the lower end points, but Stanford a couple spots away from contending, I think for sure.
Shout outs to Steve Solomon, Aussie Olympian, 400 meter runner at Stanford. They'll creep on you and stuff like that. You know, he'll get the baton and, you know, drop like a 44.9 or something. Mm. And you'll be like, well, Stanford has sprinters. Though you think that way because at Peyton Jordan, they'll run the 100 and there'll be one guy who runs it. And then that is a...
Literally, that's a thing. One guy.
It'll set the standard for Stanford. You associate Stanford, no sprinters, and here we are now.
Right.
Let's see who else we had run this week. And we had Jaeger finished second. Centro looked really good out there. I don't know what the total recovery time was between his two races. But, smooth. It came out with wins in the 1K, I believe it was, and then the mile. So shout out to Matt Centrowitz for opening 2015, much like he ran in over the last 2 years.
One quick thing.
Yeah.
The only mark that other from all the stuff at UW I'm excited about was Sean McGordy. Congratulations. Join
right.
the club. Homie.
He's so good. I'm going to be honest. I did not think he could hang with the big dogs, and he keeps proving me wrong in like big cross country races and at Washington. That kid is solid. He's been developed very well.
Jake Langang was in there for a bit, but then kind of faded towards the end. Those two, I believe they are the same grade.
Yeah.
Langang
was a little too ambitious out early. But he'll be back.
We didn't see Ed Chez either.
One thing about go ahead.
No, go ahead, Mitch.
One thing about McGordy is I know it was an article maybe 2 years ago, but his dad was a junior I think an NCAA or US junior decathlon title. He competed at the trials, and his mom was at least a one-time, maybe two-time Foot Locker finalist. I'm not sure on that, but he comes from a very athletically sound family. Dude's got good genes, and of course he has good wheels.
I have three other notes I just want to throw out real quick from the Washington invite, all right? And they are A, Centro is healthy and looks leaner than we've ever seen. I think my wife actually pointed that out to me. He looks just lean. He just looks skinny and ready to rock, like late season form. She got beaten the final straightaway by Roberry in that race, but she didn't fall apart. She didn't crumble. And remember, that's Shannon Roberry, a very, very good 15 3K girl. So Hase looks like she's, you know, maybe getting a little more solid base in her. And Elise Cranny, guys, that girl is a freshman and she's fearless. Just latching onto the NOP crew. Very impressed by her.
moving on to that 400 that we were talking 400s and sprinters that we were talking about, let's touch on the dream that might come true, that's pretty close to coming true. And finally, Jeremy Warner on the record talking about the 800. So, conducted the interview on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
It was a call that was scheduled for noon. And then I got a text in the morning that said, you know, he might be late because he's got practice. And then I got worried that he might flake out. No, he said he's ready to talk. So we spoke for, I think it was like 30 minutes or so. And the first thing I asked him was like, Florida Relays, last time I saw you, you said you're going to try something new in 2015. Is it the 800? It's like, are you going to stick to the 800? Is that something new that you're going to try? And he said no. And I was like, whoa. I was all right. I just got flustered because I had this whole list of questions about the 800 afterwards. And but he did say he might try and open up with one. So we're gonna be able, we might be able to see Jeremy Warner, and it might happen at like in late March, so maybe less than 2 months away.
Texas Relays.
Now, maybe. Texas Relays, I think he wants to run a 400. He said the 800 might be before that at a Baylor meet or something like that. But, yeah, Mitch, you shared the story on Twitter. You said, no one wake me up from this dream.
Dare to dream. I want no one to ever shake me. I want to sleep in this eternal slumber forever. This has been a dream maybe since I started running track. I love the hypotheticals. The when Mo and Usain flirted with maybe a 600 meter race a year or two ago. I mean, yeah, juices were flowing. So this one in particular has been something that's very near and dear to me. I would personally pay him a large sum of money just to see it happen. And because, you know, I'm morbidly curious. Could he go, if this was 6 years ago, you know, what could he run? Now he says maybe like 150 is good for him. Jeremy, don't set your bar so low. There's a guy, he ran like 141, 140. You could be the first man to go sub 140. Just put your mind to it, and I believe in you.
The funny thing is, he noted that Brandon Johnson set his world record in the 400 at the age of 31. So age is not even a number to him. Nick Simmons is a month older than Jeremy Warner. So this move might be timed right. And I guess if he hits 147 in his first shot, if I'm him, I'm thinking, you know, maybe not just one shot. Like, let's do this a few more times. Kevin Liao texted me after he read the story, and he said, hey, what's your prediction? And I think, let me see what I had. I think I had 140. I'll pull up right here. But Alex, go ahead. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I don't want to trample on everyone's dreams here. But as somebody who works for the brand he runs for, I don't want to put too much pressure on him. I think we are definitely excited to see him open up with the 800. It's, you know, in all honesty, it is a common move by a lot of 400 guys. David Verberg opened up with an 800, I think, last weekend at George Mason. And I can possibly confirm he ordered some mid-distance bikes. Whether he's going to run in them or not for the actual race, we can't confirm. But, no, I think it's great. And Chavez, I'm glad you brought up the age thing, because it's so crazy to think about how young Jeremy Warner was when he won those medals. It's so crazy. I mean, he won those back in Athens. In Athens, he was winning gold medals. He was 20. And now here we are today talking about him, still relevant. That's pretty cool, I think. I'm not going to set my standards super, super high at this point. But, you know, I think if it does go well, he might need some more partners around him. He's at Baylor. It used to be called 400U. He might need a couple people around him to push him if he's really going to get after this 800.
He's actually training alone now. So he's still with Coach Hart, but he's not at Baylor. He's got a family now, so he's down in
just had a new one.
He's down in McKee, I think, or something out in Texas. And so he's driving up and down between – not as often, though. He's using Michael Johnson's facilities. But for me, 148.67, lock it in. That's what I have in mind for Warner's first 800. And you know, I did bring up Brandon Johnson when I was talking to him. I said, "Listen, there's this guy who's a 400 hurdler. Then he gave the 800 shot. Ended up running 143 that summer." I was like, "Does that like even get you motivated a little bit more?" And he said, "Well, I mean, if I come out with a 143 in my first shot, then maybe." So I spoke to Otto Bolden shortly after the call, and we're going to toss it over now to a quick interview with the sprint guru on his thoughts for Warner's move to the 800.
All right, Otto. So Jeremy Warner to the 800. For you, just right off the bat, does that make any sense?
As a fan, I'm actually very excited about it. Because even when he was a 400-meter runner, a lot of people said just the way he runs, and everybody knows how legendary his training is. He was always in great shape. He was always very, very strong. He was more of a strength quarter miler than a speed quarter miler. Everybody thought that it would be something he was good at. Having said that, I think he's going to find out a lot about it very early because – you know, I know, you know, you get to that 30-ish year in your career, especially as many quality races as he's had. I don't know if his body's ready to go twice the distance. So I will be watching with the rest of the track and field fans to see if there's anything left in that tank, because quarter milers who, you know, have run the kind of times he has to then step up and run twice the distance, that's asking a lot of a body that has already given him, you know, a Hall of Fame career.
Right. So he said he's only going to do this once, and that's probably to open up the season for strength. And then he's going to continue to focus on the 400 in 2015. Now, LaShawn seems to be a lock on the U.S. squad. Then we have Tony McQuay, silver medalist in Moscow, so you can't count him out. And then from there, there's a lot of people running, you know, 44 high, 45 low. Realistically, after knee surgery in 2009, running 44-1, I believe it was, in 2010, and then just the last few years being maybe a little disappointing, does Jeremy Warner, you know, have a chance, like, on the U.S. squad for Beijing, in your view?
I don't think that the U.S. squad is so, like you said, it's so bulletproof that he would not have a chance. But having said that, the part of his race that has deserted him is the finish. It takes him so much just to get to 300 that no matter who he gets there with, he just has not been able to finish. So if he's going to reach back and have the type of year that we haven't seen from him in 3 or 4 years, then sure, every season has, you know, a surprise. But as of January 14th, 2015, I would bet against that happening.
Another question is his age. 31 at the end of this month. From there, I mean, if we look at the other guys, Nick Simmons turned 21 about a month ago. But then you also have to you take into consideration the fact Michael Johnson set his world record at 31. So in sprinting, what do you think? Is age just a number?
It's not about age. It's mileage. That's always the case with track and field. That's why you see prodigies burnt out at 18. It's not so much the age. It's the mileage. Jeremy has run, I think he's number two at with in terms of sub 44 his lifetime. I'm pretty sure he is. So for me, I just don't know. I just don't know that there's that body has anything left to give again at 400. And when I say anything left to give, LaShawn and Karani, looking forward, are going to be 43 quarter milers. That's not going to change anytime soon. So, you know, if it takes 44 high to make the U.S. team, possibility. But again, I just I would have to see that, because the last couple years, at least what I have seen, says to me, look, dude, you had a great career, and the end isn't always pretty, but this looks like the end.
So you mentioned the end of those careers. What if 2015 is the end for Jeremy Warner, or 2016? Because he said if he runs well, stays healthy, he might give the team a shot next year. Right now, as of right now, what is Jeremy Warner's legacy for U.S. sprinting?
He's one of the best quarter milers ever. He was dominant at a time when he had, very good competition. He's won just about everything there is to win, world champion a couple of times, Olympic champion, and Olympic silver. People look at that silver as, he didn't win the second time. The number of people who have gone gold and silver in successive Olympics in that event, you could count them on one hand. So he has had a legendary career, and if it is the end, it's a career that he can be proud of.
So as you guys heard Otto Bolden say there, it's not really about the age, but more of the mileage that gets under these guys' legs. So Jeremy Warner moved to the 800. It's exciting for everyone. Even Otto's excited. The Let's Run message boards were lit up. When I texted Rojo, I was like, hey, man, just a heads up, I'm going to have this coming your way in a few. He immediately got excited. So, yeah, Jeremy Warner, we'll check back with him in March to see what the status is of this 800. Or we might get him on the show to see how it went. Now, we mentioned mileage. Let's move up to some half marathon talk.
You're killing the transitions, Chavez.
Oof. I'm trying here. Houston half was this morning, and I overslept. But I caught up with some of the action later on. Saw Meb didn't win. And Diego Estrada surprised us all, using a different tactic by really taking it out hard. You guys surprised by this or no?
Well, taking it out hard is not something I'm surprised when we're talking about Diego Estrada. It's something we've seen before, and something he's definitely not afraid to race. And we've seen, he stuck his nose in a lot of races and a lot of big time track races, and that's his style. I saw a quote from him, and I think it said, I didn't know what I was doing out there. I knew I could do 10 miles in 4:35, and then after that, I think he was just kind of leaving it up to chance. And I think at one point David Monty tweeted that he was running in a different zip code. So who knows how actually fast he could have ran if he had somebody pushing him, because he was running by himself for quite a bit. So definitely impressed by Mr. Estrada today. Good for him. He has the whole he toiled around with a lot of tough citizenship situations, and I'm glad he's got it all cleared up, and now he's a U.S. champion. It's a pretty awesome story.
Mitch, you spoke to him about that citizenship stuff, right?
Yeah, he was super, humble. That's the word I'm looking for here. Appreciative of the Mexican Federation and everything they've done for him. But he has, he's always going to be a Mexican American, but he wants to represent the country that he loves. Not that he doesn't love Mexico, but he just felt a really strong passion to compete for the U.S. And I'm going to get to that in a quick second, but his turnaround, he's kind of been, like, as you said, like floating around, not just within that that country divide of Mexico, America, but he's been floating around that zone of, like, low 13s, 1350, low 27s, 27, 26 or something. But when I talked to him, the thing he was equally as passionate about competing for the U.S., was his switch to Coach Vigil. He thinks that he's – Vigil makes him a rock star. He thinks Vigil's a rock star, a genius, and you can see it just from the way he's been running. And back to the point I had earlier, we talked last week about, who's going to make that marathon team next, instead of a year from now, I guess, or maybe in February in LA. And I don't know, man, Diego Estrada.
He said he would have to debut in like Chicago or something for him to really get that whole 26.2 mile distance a shot. So I mean it's really cutting it close. I was thinking the same exact thing. I was like, he's definitely got a better shot at making the U.S. marathon team than he does with the 10K, because that 10K is going to be tough to make. You'll probably have Galen as a lock, then Chris Derrick, and that third spot just immediately comes up to grabs. And I mean, you're going to have guys coming off like the marathon trial. So let's say for some reason Ritz doesn't make it again in the marathon, he's going to give that 10K a shot, and he's probably going to be really strong in that too. So I don't know. It's like, I get the same exact feel that you do about his really how high he holds Coach Vigil, like in his regards or whatever it is. Just because that summer you guys sent me to Europe was his first summer as a pro, and so he was out there. He was making his debut for Asics in Lausanne, and he was talking about Coach Vigil, and it seems like that training is finally starting to work for him. Maybe that transition from coaches took a little bit of a while, but no, it's looking really good. And so Coach Vigil from Adams State, now coaching Brenda and Diego. So he might have maybe two Olympians on his hands by 2016. Mitch, you have anything to add?
Meb. Oh, thank you. That's a very nice compliment. I don't remember what it was. Oh, V-heel strength. Yeah, we see Brenda doing these dumb long, like silly long workouts, like 12K workout, but she runs the 800. We see Diego train for the half. I think he told me he wants to run the 5K for like the next 4 years. So not that anything's set in stone, not even a 10K he wants to run. He wants to make the team in the 5K, but this was last May, so things change. Nothing's set in stone.
Meb, with a strong performance, maybe wasn't his best day out there. He's probably going to race maybe one or two more times before Boston. Then we had Jared Ward was up there as well, rocking the brand new Saucony singlet. So he's going to be running LA next 2 months from now. So on the women's side, I think the surprise was Kellen Taylor of the Northern Arizona Elite training group with Ben Rosario, ran 2:28:40 for her debut. Only five American women have run faster in their first shot at the marathon. So lots to be happy about there. I think Becky Wade ran the full marathon. Becky Wade ran a PR in the half. So yeah, people come to Houston. Lots of Olympic trial qualifiers. Houston was the spot to be at today. And I think Mitch, you might have a special shout out for Houston, right?
I was going to say real quick to the guys. I have one for the women's too. Don't worry about it.
But, yeah.
48 guys ran the half standard 105 sub. My roommate, my boy, Jake Sienko, has been living, training, breathing this race. Ran 104.35 for 40th. XOXO, can't wait for you to come home with some barbecue.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, super pumped. Scott Fobble, too, another Portland guy I've seen out here. just grinding on that Grape Crush grind. He got 31st. He just broke 64 minutes. So, us Portlanders have to keep it real sometimes. And I'm really proud.
What insight could you give us into Jake's training?
He sleeps a lot. And I'm going to be honest, he's working at the Portland Running Store here, and I don't even have a joke here because he has lived so seriously for this last 7 months and for this single race, and just to see it come to fruition, I mean, it's like seeing a dream come true before your eyes. So I'm actually really proud of him. It's kind of inspirational because he committed to this single goal and he actually did it, as opposed to me, who half-asses committed to something and then fails and then gives up, so.
Al, you have anything from Houston?
Houston, from our side, Adidas, we had four girls in the top 10 of the half results. I thought that went pretty well. Brianne Nelson still on fire. She was a top American over in Scotland, second today. And then a couple debuts from some young girls, and that was the BAA girls, Julia Butteroff and Katie Matthews, both solid days and solid debuts at like a long race, serious distance. And so it goes along with, there's a lot of young female talent on the up and up. And we saw a lot of that at Houston today. And shout out to my boy Aaron Braun for the top American in the full section of Houston. So that's all I got.
Then just quick results. I think Ryan Hall just got nipped for the win out in Arizona, where he was running the half out there, opted to run that one instead of the U.S. Championship. Amy Hastings, I think, yep, got the win on the women's side out there. So getting ready for Boston as well. So lots of guys really getting out there to race before the marathon season gets into full bloom.
One last thing. It's really easy to talk about the women's winner.
Right. But wow.
Kim Connolly, she is making these really good incremental steps, which an interesting contrast. We were talking about strength earlier with Vigil and Brenda and Diego. But last winter, I think she PR'd at 800 and the mile, like 424. And then now she's doing over distance. She made her debut in the 10K, ran really well at, was it Peyton Jordan, one of the Stanford meets. And then she PR'd that summer in the 5K, 1508. So now her and
– yep.
I see what you're doing, Drew Wartenberg, building that strength up right now. I got to give props to you, both of you guys. These small incremental steps, you know, it's about the longevity. It's not about the big progress. So I'm excited to see her do some big things.
Now for – the fun part of the show. Now, here's the transition. Mentioned Arizona, where Ryan Hall and Amy Hastings ran.
Nice.
Now we're going to stay in Arizona. Sam Shalenga joins Bernard Lagat's training group. So I believe out there they have Steven Sambu, Bernard Lagat, Larry LeLang, the Black Cactus, Abdirahman, I believe is how you pronounce it. And
Abdi.
Yeah, Abdi for short. And now Sam Shalenga leaving Ben True for some warmer weather. So, guys, their training group does not have a name, and I believe they are all Nike athletes. So let's come up with some names here. We did it for Jerry's group. Let's brainstorm for Lagat's group.
Lee's Army, maybe? I don't know. I found out about this at the Bowerman Award, actually, but I couldn't tell anyone. But, I mean, you guys, Sam Shalenga is really, really good. Remember how we were all freaking out during the indoor season last year when Rupp just blew up? Sammy was right there the whole time, and Sammy beat him always. Remember at NCAA Cross, it was Sammy setting the course record. I think it's a great fit for Sammy and his wife and his young son. Very kind people. Lee's Army. That's all I got right now.
I like that. I like General Lee's Army or something like that.
Oh!
Mitch.
I'm going to go, and I'm going to be honest, haven't really put a lot of thought into this, mainly because I missed this bullet point on our email for discussions. So I actually... like having a good karaoke song in the back of your pocket, I keep a bunch of good nicknames in the back of my pocket. So I'm gonna go with I'm gonna get on the first try. I don't want to butcher it. The clumsy vinyl store clerk, and it's gonna be abbreviated because all this group does. I'm gonna put my shades on when I say this. All they do is break records. So the group is full of record breakers.
Oof.
They have a bunch in there. I mean, why not just say it? Everyone's thinking it, right?
No, no, we're not all thinking it. No, I don't think anyone was thinking that at all. That was classic. That nailed my expectation for your delivery, Mitch.
Wow.
Fire me into the sun. Just fire me into the sun. You're welcome. Lazy headline writers or Nike sports marketing. I'll take whatever you give me.
God, I can't come up with anything good. Never been to Tucson, but I know it's hot. I feel like it sounds like a basketball team if I call them the Tucson Heat Track Club or something like that. That's pretty lame, isn't it?
During the heat, the cactus is no water needed. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
know.
I could see this on a shirt, but not really.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'll be the weak one. I'll just say Tucson Heat Track Club.
I don't know, Black Cactus. Say what you will about that appropriate that nickname is. PC that nickname is, but I don't know, Black Cactus Track Club, BCTC.
He gave that nickname to himself, right? I think we discussed that before.
I don't know. I think so. Whatever. Abdi's a trip. I love Abdi Abdurrahman.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our show for this week. Kind of all over the place with road racing and track stuff going on, but we'll be a little bit more organized this upcoming week. Really don't know what else is what is in store, so just surprise stories coming up this upcoming week. We want to thank you guys for listening once again, and we'll catch you again next week.
See ya.